We're going to start chapter 15 today, Purushottam Yoga. And chant verse number 1.
Shri Bhagavan Vacha Udvamulam Madashakam Ashvatam Prahuravyayam Chadamsi Yasya Varnani Yastang Vedasa Vedavid.
Supreme Personality of God had said, it is said that there is an imperishable banyan tree that has its roots upward and its branches down, and whose leaves are the Vedic hymns. One who knows this tree is the knower of the Vedas. So, in the last chapter, Krishna concluded that the only means to rise above the three modes of nature is to perform undeviated devotional service. Unfailingly. Avyabhacharena bhakti yogena sevate. So one would naturally wonder, how does one begin to perform bhakti yoga? And now Krishna describes that in chapter 15. In the first section, from 1 to 5, he's describing how detachment is necessary to begin the path of bhakti. Has to be some detachment. And he gives the example of the banyan tree in order to illustrate this point. Other questions are, well, what is Brahman and what is Krishna? Because Krishna said he's the foundation of Brahman. And that one who performs bhakti comes to the Brahman platform. So one may also ask these questions. Although Krishna said he's the foundation, one may want to know something more about that. And that's described in towards the end of this chapter. And the last question is, what do the Vedas have to do with all of this? Are these things spoken of in the Vedas? So that question is also answered. So after reading chapter 14, one may have these three questions, and chapter 15 answers them. So Krishna now describes more about this process of bhakti that he concluded in chapter 14. And he begins by describing detachment, by giving this analogy of the banyan tree, urdva mulam adashakam ashvatam prahuravayam, that there is this ashwata tree, and it is urdvamulam. The roots are going up, adha shaka, and the branches are coming down. So usually a tree has its roots going down and its branches going up. So this is a very peculiar tree. And one cannot really find this tree in this world except at the bank of a river. Because one can see in the reflection of the water by the river or lake, that perverted tree being reflected in the water, on the water surface. So there is a real place in the spiritual world which is full of variegatedness. There's persons and places and houses and activities and animals, and there's sequences of time, of sequences of events that happen. And so this is the vastu, or the actual real spiritual place, the reality, our eternal reality. And this place is a perverted reflection. So the fact that there is a reflection indicates that there is a real thing. Just as when there's a shadow, it indicates there's an actual object. So when there's a reflection, it indicates there's something real. Just as when you see a mirage of water in the desert and you go running to get water and there's no water, it indicates that there's something which is real called water, which is being misunderstood. So this verse indicates that there is a spiritual world. and that this material world is just a reflection of that. And the example is of this Ashwata tree. The word Ashwata itself is interesting. It indicates the nature of this material world. If one breaks it down, Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur kindly broke down the syllables, parts of this word in his commentary. So he says the word shwa means tomorrow, and ashwa means not tomorrow, and sta means to stay, and that is changed grammatically to ta. So this ashwata means that which will not stay tomorrow. It's temporary, temporary world. It's temporary for the devotees because they'll go to the spiritual world, so they won't stay in the material world. For them it won't stay tomorrow, right, in the future. They won't be in the material world, they'll be in the spiritual world, hopefully, if they chant their rounds nicely. And for the non-devotees, everything will be ripped away from them at the time of dissolution. So everything that they're acquiring in this world will also not stay tomorrow. So for them, the material world is also ashwata. There's another analysis, because the word ashwa means horse also, like ashwamedha, yajna. And ta means sta, to stay. So this material world stays or stands like a horse. Has anyone ever worked with horses before? Please raise your hands. So how does a horse stand? The legs are always moving. Okay? That's true. Usually the horse is... How else? Huh?
Passion.
Okay, but describe, give some more detailed description of how the legs of the horse are standing. Huh? Anybody know? Any horse experts here? Well, if you notice that the legs of the horse are something like this. Down, go around, kick you in the face. Or whatever. So this is some of the, there's some of the detailed analysis of the word ashwata. So Krishna's used this tree for different reasons, as in his analogy. And he used the word avyaya, which means eternal or indestructible. So this ekpad vibhuti, this material existence, this banyan tree, is also eternal. Particularly for the non-devotees, this material existence is eternal. In other words, it's perpetual as long as they remain envious of God and don't serve Him. So then they remain in this material world. And we know that the material energy is eternal. It just manifests and unmanifests. Bhutva bhutva praliyate. It goes through cycles. But the energy is eternal. So it's avyayam. This banyan tree. Prabhupada mentions in the lecture that here the material world is described as urdva mulam. Just like someone holds you by the legs and your legs are up, and your head is down, that after a very short time you feel very uncomfortable. So this whole material world is like that. The mulam should be down, but it's up. Therefore, it's uncomfortable. This material is an uncomfortable, awkward place. And everything goes wrong. The Murphy's Law kicks in the material world. If there's anything that can go wrong, it will. So it is a perverted reflection of the spiritual world. And Krishna gives some detailed analysis of the tree and the material realm. Here it says, Shadhangsi yasya paranani, that the leaves are considered the Vedic hymns. So the leaves of the tree are the first thing that you notice of a tree, the most attractive feature of the tree. Because in the winter, when the leaves fall off, the tree looks quite bare and naked and not very attractive, like a skeleton. But when there's a lot of rain, like there has been in Vrindavan for the last 6 months or so, then there are many, many leaves, and everything becomes very lush and beautiful, and the trees look very attractive. And it inspires the birds and the monkeys. Like when we were in Govardhan yesterday, I noticed the monkeys were particularly enlivened, jumping from one tree to another and swinging and rattling the tree branches, because there was so much beautiful foliage on the tree. Whereas last year, because it was so dry, they weren't so enthusiastic to do this, to play in the trees. So the leaves of the tree are the first thing you notice, and it's the most attractive thing. So the Vedic hymns are the things which thing which attract and keep the living entity in the material world. Because the Vedic hymns are generally of the nature of karmakanda, you know. And they offer material allurements in the form of dharma, artha, kama, and moksha. And most people are interested only in the dharma, artha, and kama. So they perform these rituals which are found in the Vedic hymns, and it keeps them swinging in the tree of material existence, just like the monkeys. They also feel enthusiastic to stay there. Yastam Vedas, the Vedavit. One who's Vedavit and he knows the Vedas, it means he understands this tree in toto, in detail, and he knows how to cut himself away from the tree. And Prabhupada explains some of these points which we've mentioned so far in his commentary. And I'll just jump around a little bit also in the commentary. After the discussion of the importance of bhakti yoga, one may question, what about the Vedas? It is explained in this chapter that the purpose of Vedic study is to understand Krishna. Therefore, one who is in Krishna consciousness, who is engaged in devotional service, already knows the Vedas. So, other than detaching oneself from the tree, Vedavid also means that he knows Krishna. Therefore, this chapter is called Purushottam Yoga. And here Krishna says, one who knows the Vedas, he understands me, because I am that which is to be understood by the Vedic study. Vedais chasayavar aham eva vedyo. Vedanta krit Vedavid eva chaham. Krishna is the only Vedavid. The one who knows Krishna, he's also Vedavid. Prabhupada continues, the entanglement of this material world is compared here to a banyan tree. For one who is engaged in fruitive activities, there is no end to the banyan tree. He wanders from one branch to another, to another, to another. The tree of this material world has no end, and for one who is attached to this tree, there is no possibility of liberation. The Vedic hymns meant for elevating oneself are called the leaves of this tree. This tree's roots grow upward, because they begin from where Brahma is located, the topmost planet of this universe. If one can understand this indestructible tree of illusion, then one can get out of it. So the main root of the tree begins at Brahmaloka, and the tree grows downward. And the process of extrication is detachment. And this is discussed in the next few verses. So the banyan tree expands from Brahmaloka and it spreads throughout the entire universe. And the upper portion of the tree is the upper planets, the Svargaloka, the Gandharvas and Siddhas and Charanas and so forth. And then the middle place is the middle planetary system where the earthlings live, mortal beings. And then the lower planets are also there, the lower part of the tree, the lower part of the branches. And the fruits that represent these four things, these purushartha, kama, moksha, dharma, and artha. These are the four types of fruits that one can find. And at the end, Prabhupada says, the material reflection of the real tree has to be cut off. When it is said that a person knows the Vedas, it is assumed that he knows how to cut off attachment to this material world. If one knows that process, he actually knows the Vedas. One who is attracted by the ritualistic formulas of the Vedas is attracted by the beautiful green leaves of the tree. He does not exactly know the purpose of the Vedas. The purpose of the Vedas, as disclosed by the Lord, is to cut down this reflected tree and attain the real tree of the spiritual world. So to the degree that we develop our attachment to Krishna, to that degree we're able to cut away our attachment to these temporary material things. But in the beginning, we may not have so much attachment to Krishna. So it's described that one should begin detachment with knowledge and discrimination. That will be mentioned again in a few verses. We'll read number 2 now.
Adaschurvam prashitastas shakha guna prabheda vishaya pravala adaschamulanyanu santadani karmani bandhini manushaloke.
The branches of this tree extend downward and upward, nourished by the three modes of material nature. The twigs are the objects of the senses. This tree also has roots going down, and these are bound to the fruit of actions of human society. So here's a further description, more detail, of the tree. So there are branches going up and down, and they're in this tree. And look, and well, you can't find the actual foundation or the beginning of the tree. You know, that's coming up in the next verse. But the material world is very entangling. And there's many branches, and there's many sub-branches, and there's many trunks and sub-trunks and twigs and tips of the branches and many different leaves. So here the twigs represent the objects of the senses. These are also described as the soft, sweet buds of the tree. The buds are the soft, newly kind of blossomed section of the twigs. The twigs are like the buds, and that's what the birds come to eat, because it's very soft. Sometimes the monkeys also eat this, because it's very soft, and they like to eat it. So the twigs are the sense objects, and that's also attractive to the living entities. They like the sense objects. That keeps them bound in the tree. And the tree also has roots going down, as well as up. And these are bound to the fruit of actions of human society. These are the subsidiary or secondary root. And these are described by one of our previous acharyas as follows. In this world, a man is working, and he sees some objects which he's attracted to. So he works very hard to accumulate money to acquire those objects. And he gets some satisfaction, but it simply increases his desire to enjoy more. So because his desire increases, the material energy kindly reciprocates with him and produces new improved sense objects. When he sees those new improved sense objects, he becomes encouraged and enlivened, and thus his desires to acquire those new sense objects stimulate him to work harder. And then he gets more money, and he acquires these new sense objects and feels some satisfaction. But then his desires increase again. And then the material nature again kindly reciprocates with his desires and produces newer, improved sense objects. And then when he sees those, he feels inspired and he works hard and he gets those. And then he feels some satisfaction. His desires increase again. The material nature again offers new sense objects. And this way, the roots are going down and around. And this way, he's completely stuck and entangled in this material banyan tree. So the next time you see a commercial where it says new improved, then you can think about this example. In America, they use this all the time for advertising. New improved, whatever it may be. Even if they just change the box or whatever. New improved on the cover. This also has to do with, as Prabhupada says here, that attachment and aversions. These secondary roots represent attachment and aversion, and thus create the fruitive actions in the human society. And thus the byproducts are suffering and enjoyment, and thus that it has to do with one tendencies toward piety and impiety. All of that is represented by the secondary roots. I described something that's not here in Prabhupada's commentary, the previous acharyas, but it's very similar what Prabhupada has described. Attachment and aversion, which brings about suffering and happiness, and has to do with piety and impiety. Because when the living entities when he sees the sense object and he tries to get it, he may try to do it in an illegal means. And that's impiety. And if he does it in a, you know, according to the Vedic regulation, then it's considered piety. But it still binds him in the material world. So in this way you can understand this. Secondary roots. But the real root, the primary root is in Brahma Loka. This is the basis of the entire tree. So depending on which branch the living entity is located on, he will possess a certain type of body and a certain set of senses, and then he'll be attracted to a certain set of sense objects. If he's a demigod, he'll have celestial sense objects, and he'll enjoy them with celestial senses. If he's in the middle part of the tree, he'll have a human body with human senses, and he'll be attracted to the human sense objects. And if he's in the lower planets or in an animal body, then he'll be attracted to those sense objects, which are the twigs of the tree. So thus the living entity is always traveling from one branch to another, sometimes going up, sometimes coming down, in all different parts of the tree. He's trying to enjoy new set of senses and new set of sense objects, thinking that it's new, this time it will be satisfactory. So Prabhupada says in the last two sentences, after one enjoys the results of virtuous activities in the upper planetary systems, he comes down to this earth and renews his karma or fruitive activities for promotion. That this planet of human beings is considered the field of activities. So this statement indicates that karma is accumulated only in the human form of life. That's why Krishna comes to the earth planet to preach, to exhibit his lila, and to speak Bhagavad Gita. Because all of the living entities in the universe, they wander up and then they come back down again, and sometimes they go down and they have to come back up to the middle planetary system. So Krishna comes to the earth planet so that all the living entities in the universe can get an opportunity to hear this knowledge and to renovate their relationship with Krishna and detach themselves from this material banyan tree. Okay, more about this tree. Texts 3 and 4.
Narupamasyetato palabhyate nanto nachadi najasam pratishtha ashwattham enam sabarudhamulam asanga shastrena dridhena chitva tata param tatpare margetavyam yasmin gatanana nivartanti bhuya tam eva chadyam purusham prabhadye yata pravritti prasita punani.
The real form of this tree cannot be perceived in this world. No one can understand where it ends, where it begins, or where its foundation is. But with determination, one must cut down this strongly rooted tree with the weapon of detachment. Thereafter, one must seek that place from which, having gone, one never returns, and there surrender to that Supreme Personality of Godhead, from whom everything began, and from whom everything has extended since time immemorial.
Narupam asyetato upalabhyate. So the real form of this tree cannot be upalabhyate, perceived in this world.
Nanto nachadiya, not just some person. One cannot understand where it begins or where it ends or where its foundation is. Just like this huge banyan tree in Calcutta. You can wander in it for days and you won't be able to find where is the main trunk, because it's too covered, too much. There's too many trunks everywhere and they all look the same. So that's what happens. The branch goes out and then it shoots these little branches down, subsidiary branches, and then they lock in to the ground, and then they grow roots also, and then they get thicker and thicker, and then they begin to look just like the trunk. We had a banyan tree in the Manila temple in the Philippines, and also we had to continually cut these kind of beards that were dangling down, because once they got into the ground and they started to grow, then what would happen is the tree would just kind of, it grows like this. And then it would just grow right into the building. You know, so we had to always trim the tree like this. So the material world is constantly transforming and growing, and it becomes more and more complicated. As we can see nowadays, things are so complicated. Before, people were very simple, especially here in India. They just grow some food, and the wife cooks up a little rice and vegetables. In the afternoon, they come and take prasadam. They go out into the fields, and in the evening, they read a little Mahabharata, then they go to sleep. Pretty simple. You know, they don't have any electric bills or water bills or a tax for the television set or, insurance for the car, or tax for the car, or I lived in London for the last 10 years, and England is a very organized country, but it's so complicated. There's so many rules and regulations and things that you have to do, and if you don't do, you'll be taxed or fined quite heavily. You're not allowed to actually burn wood in any of the flats in London. You can't have a chimney, only for show. Of course, some of the old flats, they have chimneys because people used to live by just burning wood. But because there's so many millions of people there now, they can't allow people to burn wood. So now everyone's forced to get electric or gas heat, which is becoming more and more expensive every year. And so you're hooked into the system. If you live in the Western countries, you have no choice. In order to stay alive, to get water, you have to pay. I was paying about $500 a year just to get water in the flat. That was just for the water. And then what to speak of the gas, the electric, and then there's tax for the car, and then you have council tax, and this and that, and insurance, and it's crazy. One thing after another. Actually, I spent about maybe one quarter of my day just like paying bills, going to this bank and this place, and, you know, figuring out if they were charging me the right amount or they already charged me for that, and calling them on the phone and this and that. So the material world is very complicated. It just becomes more and more entangling as you go along. More and more desires crop up, and more cheating processes crop up, and you get sucked into it. It's like a whirlpool. You may try to stay on the edge, but it just sucks you right into the middle and drags you down. That's the material world. So, this Ashwatha tree said that Sivirudha Mulam, that the root is very strong. It's impossible to actually destroy this tree. It's so powerful because it's Krishna's Daivi Shakti. It's his energy. Daivyeshu Gunamai Mama Maya Dratyaya. But one can cut away his own connection with the tree, although he may not be able to cut down the entire tree, but he can cut away his connection from the tree. How can he do that? Asanga Shastraina Dridhena Chitva. Chitva. He can cut it. Dridhena. In a very determined way, with this asanga shastra, this weapon of detachment. Asanga means detachment, and shastra means weapon. So you need a sharp weapon to cut, and this is the weapon of detachment. Therefore, Krishna is talking about detaching oneself, understanding the illusory, entangling, complicated, illusory, and, you know, constantly increasing the nature of this banyan tree just brings you in more and more. And one realizes what's going on, then this person can cut, because he sees that this is a horrible thing. It's just making me suffer more and more. So when he can use his detachment, but he has to keep this axe, this weapon, which is compared to an axe, because you need something with some leverage, you know, to cut away from your attachment from this tree. You can't do it with a little, you know, letter opener or some little pen knife. You need an axe that has some force behind it. So, but that axe has to be kept sharp. If the axe is dull, you can chop away all you like, but it's not going to do anything. So how do you keep it sharp? With viveka, discrimination. One must have discrimination to keep his axe sharp. The discrimination is given in the shastras. And this is what keeps one's detachment. Otherwise, the mind has a tendency to return back again and again to those sense objects. Even though one has detached himself from those sense objects, the mind has a tendency to go back again and again, because that's where he found his shelter before, for so many births. So he has a tendency to go back to the sense objects, find that pleasure there, security. But it doesn't work like this. One must stop this mind going back. There's no security there. There's no real pleasure there. So one must use discrimination to keep his axe sharp. So once he does this, then tataparam tat parimargitavyam yasmin gatata nivartanti bhuya. Then he must go to the place where one never returns. And he must surrender to the Supreme Lord. Again, you have the word purusham prapadye. Tam eva chadyam purusham prapadye. To that original person, to that adipurush. This mentality of surrender that brings one to Krishna. This is the beginning of bhakti. This is the prerequisite to bhakti, this surrender. So there's six stages of surrender. One begins with dainya, which will be described in the next verse. Bhaktivinoda Thakur wrote songs about Sharanagati, and it's based on Hari Bhakti Vilas, Anukuyasya Sankalpa, Pratikuyasya Varjanam, Nakshisha Tatevikshakso, Gopridve Varanam Tata, Atmani Shepa Karpanye, Shadvidha Sharanagati. So Sharanagati has six stages to it. And when one surrenders, then it brings him to the Supreme Lord. Prabhupada says, to gain the favor of that personality of Godhead, one has only to surrender. And this is a result of performing devotional service by hearing and chanting, etc. Okay. So then one might inquire, what are the qualifications of one to go to that place? That place which one never returns from. And Krishna describes the qualifications to go there in the next verse. Nirmana moha jida sanga dosha adhyatma nitya vinivritya kama dganver vimukta sukha dukha sangyar kachantya mudha bharama vyantat. Those who are free from false prestige, illusion, and false association, who understand the eternal, who are done with material lust, who are freed from the dualities of happiness and the stress, and who, unbewildered, know how to surrender unto the Supreme Person, attain to that eternal kingdom. So these are the qualifications for one to go back to the kingdom of God, beginning with nirmana. Right? So the six stages of surrender, which are also the same as the 12-step program that the karmis have discovered, that they use in AA meetings. Well, they've been using it for the last 50 years and so forth. Some devotees have understood and practiced and used this system also. It's 12 steps, two steps for each of the six stages of surrender, of Sharanagati. And it begins with dainya. Although the shloka ends with dainya, but actually begins with humility. One must give up this false conception of being, you know, perfect, powerful, and happy. You know, siddoham balavan sukhi, ishwaroham aham bhogi. Now, this is the first thing one has to give up, this concept that I'm supreme, I'm independent, I don't need anyone, I'm happy, I'm perfect, I'm better than everyone, I'm powerful, I'm wealthy, just see, I have aristocratic relatives, no one can surpass me. As long as one is in this mood, then how can he surrender to God? He thinks he's God, that others should surrender to him. Madhvacharya says the same thing. So one has to have this mood of humility, that I'm helpless, I can't do anything, I need mercy, I'm not perfect, I'm not happy, I'm not very powerful, right? There has to be this humility in order to begin this process of surrender. So then when he does that, then he offers himself to the Lord and tries to get direction from the Lord in Atmanivedanam. He offers his body, mind, and words to the Lord, seeking for direction, feeling again that the Lord is his maintainer, Gopritve Varanam Tata Rakshishati Divishva. So he has faith that the Lord will protect him. And then he accepts things which are favorable and he rejects unfavorable things to his goal, which is to go to Krishna. So this is the process of Purushottam Yoga. It begins with Dainya or Nirmana. It means no pride. Ma means pride, like Nama. Nama. No pride. I bow to you. Namaste. Nirmana. Moha. So one is also free from illusion. Prabhupada says the first qualification is that one should not be deluded by pride. For one who is always expecting some honor in this material world, it is not possible to surrender to the Lord. Pride is due to illusion. For although one comes here, stays for a brief time, and then goes away, he has the foolish notion that he is the Lord of the world. He thus makes all things complicated, and he's always in trouble. The whole world moves under this impression. So illusion and pride are intimately linked. He's under illusion that he's the Lord. Adhyatma Nitya means spiritual knowledge, always engaged in cultivating spiritual knowledge. It also means always discussing Krishna Katha. Vinivritta Kama, he's given up lust because he's given up this proud enjoying mentality. So he's given up lust. And thus, he's freed from the dandva vimukta. He's freed from the dualities of this world, sukha dukkha sangha, which bring about happiness and distress. And thus, gacchanti mudha, being unbewildered, he can go to that place, which is in to that eternal abode. So, one way to begin practicing humility is to serve the Vaishnavas. To become truly humble, one must serve the Vaishnavas. Okay, now you may ask two more questions. One is, what is that place like? What is the nature of that eternal abode? And does one have to come back from that place? And Krishna answers these two questions in the next verse. Na tad bhasyate suryo na shashanko na pavaka yad gatbana nivartante tadhama paramam mamam. That supreme abode of mine is not illumined by the sun or moon, nor by fire or electricity. Those who reach it never return to this material world. So Prabhupada says that one should be captivated by this information of the spiritual world. Just like when one hears about America, how the roads are paved with gold, and there are such big, big buildings there, and beautiful cars, and everyone's rich, and everyone eats with ghee. And then someone thinks, oh, what a wonderful place, I'd like to see this place. Of course, it's mostly lies, but when you hear about a place which is wonderful, you think, oh, I'd like to go and see that place. So hearing about the spiritual world where everything is self-luminous, there's no need for a sun or moon, fire or electricity, as an eternal abode, you never come back from this place, and that's Krishna's supreme abode. Then one should be attracted to go to that place. Of course, this is a very brief description. There's not so much detail given, like in Brahma Samhita or Srimad Bhagavatam, but there's something. The acharyas have described that there's some esoteric meaning behind these words, natad bhasyate suryo, that the god of the sun is also the god of the eyes, the demigod of the eyes who controls the eyesight. So it also means to say that it is not with your material eyes that you can see that Vaikuntha realm. It cannot be illuminated by the sun. It means that you cannot see it with your material eyes. And na shashanko, Shashab means the moon, and the deity of the moon is the deity of the mind also, Chandra. That's why when there's a full moon, people become a little crazy, because their minds are affected, because the lunar deity is controlling the minds. So it's not with the gross material mind. Can you understand that spiritual realm? And the pavaka, pavaka means fire, which also means electricity. Electricity is just another form of fire. But the demigod of fire also controls our speech. Therefore, sometimes people have fiery speech. And so therefore, with your material speech, with your words, you cannot describe that place, which is beyond this material realm, which is that eternal Vaikuntha abode. It cannot be seen, thought of, or described with the gross material senses. So this is one deeper meaning of these words. But you won't be tested on this. But it's for your own satisfaction, your intellectual satisfaction. Let's stop here. Are there any questions? Reflection of the real tree is an exact replica. Everything is there in the spiritual world. The impersonalists take Brahman to be the root of this material tree. From the root, according to Sankhya philosophy, come Prakriti, Purusha, then the three gunas, then the five gross elements, Panchamahabhut, and then the ten senses, Dashendriya, mind, etc. In this way, they divide up the whole material world into 24 elements. If Brahman is the center of all manifestations, then this material world is a manifestation of the center by 180 degrees, and the other 180 degrees constitute the spiritual world. It's just, you know, there's no spiritual world in the mind body, but for us there's a spiritual world. But even the impersonalists, they see that Brahman is the root of the material tree. His argument is that if, you know, this material is preferred to reflection, so then the spiritual world must have variegatedness also, because we find it here. So the Purusha is not a manifestation of Brahman, but the Brahman is the manifestation of Purusha. But still everything comes from Brahman, whether it's, you know, personal Brahman or impersonal Brahman. All the impersonalists can see. In that line. Alright, alright. They don't go beyond that. Alright. It means bhakti yoga. I mean, this Krishna is describing, he's expanding upon these verse, last two verses of chapter 14. How to rise above the modes, and he said you can do it by bhakti yoga. And now he's describing how to begin the process of bhakti yoga. So the goal of Purushottam Yoga is to develop or, you know, renovate one's loving relationship with Krishna. That's what Purushottam Yoga means, bhakti yoga. How can we connect the middle six chapters with the chapter 15? Well, there are, because they're not in sequence, there's no like kind of scriptural connection or linear connection. There's philosophical equivalents and, you know, principles which are connected, because in chapter 7 and 9 and there are points of, you know, which parallel one another here. Because Krishna said, Bhumir Apanalo Vayu, right? I'm the material energy. That's like the banyan tree. There's living entities, which is his superior nature. He's the source of both of them. And there are in his chapter 8, Krishna also described graphically the contrasting the material and the spiritual worlds. The material world, how it's sasriyuga paryantam aharyad brahmanovidu. You know, how there's 1,000 ages taken together as Brahma's one day, right? How the temporary nature of the material world, as opposed to that parastasmattu bhavanyo, that higher nature, which is supreme, which the Vedantists describe as eternal. That's my place. So this is very similar to this verse. Those things are very similar. Krishna's he's approaching again because the idea is to understand what is the connection with the Vedas and to understand about bhakti, how to begin bhakti. So Krishna's weaving these two themes and approaching bhakti in a analytical way, describing the Vedas and the entanglement of the material world and how one has to cut off his attachment to, because that's one of the subsidiary goals of Vedic studies, to develop detachment. Nehayat karma dharmaya naviraga kalpate tirta parasevayam jivanapramantohisa. That the goal of working in doing dharma is to develop the goal of karma is to develop dharma, religiosity. And the goal of religiosity is to develop detachment. So it's an important step on the process. Then the goal of detachment is to develop love for Krishna. And if someone doesn't progress from one to the next, then he's considered to be a dead body even though breathing. So Krishna's approaching, he's in the beginning of bhakti, there requires some detachment, because unless we have detachment, we're going to be too much absorbed in material things to surrender. And we know that's true. Usually, if we reflect on ourselves and our life and how we joined ISKCON, there was a period of developing knowledge and purifying ourselves and gradually coming to the point where we can detach ourselves from these material things, seeing them as, you know, evil or, you know, encumbering or useless or bad, negative somehow. We felt dissatisfied with material life. So then we came to Krishna. So that's detachment. And unless one feels that dissatisfaction, deep dissatisfaction in the heart, then he won't give it up. He'll continue trying to squeeze pleasure out of the fruits of the banyan tree. You know, Thakur and Srila Prabhupada describe it beginning with karpanye or humility, dainya. And then atmanishep, karpanye, like this, atmanishepa, self-surrender, and then the other two, and then the last two. That's how they describe it. Bhaktivinoda Thakur, you can look at it as Sharanagati. That's the sequence. And Prabhupada also wrote this in Hawaii on a piece of paper. And he wrote it like this also. I have that, I can show it to you. Pushta Krishna Swami had kept that. And Prabhupada made some notes about this sequence. Before one rejects and accepts things, that's after one surrenders. Because unless there's humility and self-surrender, then how will the person accept and reject based upon anything other than his sense gratification? So that's the end result. That begins the process where one's actually, you know, taking up this process of bhakti. But surrender has to come first. There's humility and then offering oneself and then accepting the Lord as the protector and maintainer. And then he accepts the rules and regulations.
He's not going to accept rules and regulations. Are you going to be able to go and preach to some student in a college and say, you follow these rules and regulations? He's not going to follow them unless he has some realization of his position as being a helpless living entity being thrown, tossed about in the ocean of samsara. Right? Afraid of taking birth again in the lower species. I mean, he's got to have some humility and some realization in order to begin this. I thought like that too, but now I've seen that not only Bhaktivinoda Thakur, but Srila Prabhupada in his notes. When I saw that, then I said, oh, this must be. He's saying the same thing as Bhaktivinoda Thakur. So I thought, well, maybe Bhaktivinoda Thakur is just, it's a song book, so maybe he just arranged it in a different way from the verse. But no, there's this procedure. Okay, we'll stop now. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.